Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Happy Syracuse takes over New York City week.
Yeah. We got, obviously had the men's basketball team's going to be playing two games in MSG. The women's basketball team's going to be playing in White Plains against Texas A&M. And then also the football team, as everyone knows by this point, will be playing at Yankee Stadium against Notre Dame. Notre Dame is going to be wearing the ugliest uniforms I've ever seen, basically designed by Ed Hardy.
they're really missing a Duke basketball and a Yankees patch. And I know that shirt's been beaten into submission, but after they were originally revealed, but they are so bad.
Just wildly awful. And that's the thing for a school that like prides itself in, you know, tradition and all this other crap. Like, Notre Dame's alternate uniforms, especially of late, have been so garishly awful.
Even the greens, and I used to, like, I know they always lose in the greens, but the old greens I thought actually looked pretty good. The greens this weekend were neon. They were very, very bright. And I think these were the first, like, official green alternates under Under Armour. And, yeah, they were very, very green. I've liked half of the Shamrock series uniforms they've had, and like half of them are just horrendous.
Yeah, I mean, this is for Syracuse fans.
These are the worst.
Yeah, absolutely worst. But like for Syracuse fans that have been clamoring for Syracuse to leave Nike, like, don't necessarily think that the grass is greener because look what they can do to Notre Dame.
Yeah, and Notre Dame accepts it with bells and whistles, which, you know, the secret about Notre Dame is they do enjoy tradition, but they also really, really like money, which eventually the AC, they will realize they can make more in a conference than they're making now. But anyway, like, the only thing that makes me, like, a little bit upset is that, like, that could have easily been us, because you know when they unveiled those pinstripe uniforms, Dr. Gross was out in California just, like, nodding. Like, he's like, yep, they have the vision.
He just sat there and went, man, that's brand.
That's so good.
shoot that directly into my veins. Just the most brand.
I'm surprised we didn't wear like purple and yellow when we played USC out there.
we might end up wearing, like, I mean, we know SU is not going to trot out like any like retro uniforms.
We're probably going to wear the platinum.
We're almost definitely going to wear platinum.
I have a real feeling. I think we wore them at least one of the MetLife games, if not two.
The last MetLife game, we wore blue, and white. And then we also had white face masks on the blue helmets just to like make it completely not on brand. And then the previous MetLife game, we went with the, I believe it was the orange helmets. No, it might have been the blue helmets. I know it was the blue helmets. It was the blue helmets with platinum, which is just...
It's horrendous. And I think it was like wet that day. I was there. I don't remember which game. It must have been the Penn State when we did not wear the platinum.
So no, it was
Notre Dame one.
It was Notre Dame for both.
Yeah. I remember very vividly, it was either like raining or just like humid because it's New York City and it's always humid. Actually, Meadowlands, but still, same thing. Oh, it's still always humid. It's a swamp. And like the interior of those jerseys just become like basically heather gray, and the rest of the uniform stays regular gray, so it almost becomes two-tone when anyone sweats. It's a really bad look. It's just a really bad jersey. I do implore them, if anyone at the athletic department has any pull in this, listens to this podcast, if you're going to wear the platinum jerseys, and I hope you don't because they're horrible, wear orange pants and orange helmets so at least we have something that kind of pops, because those jerseys pop like negative pop. They are so drab. And the only way to kind of make it okay is if you wear all orange, everything else.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, hopefully, with luck, the new Nike contract throws those things into the fire, never to be seen again. Alas, we'll get some more football in the second half of this one. I don't want basketball folks to think that we're just completely ignoring the fact that the season started already. Definitely want to jump in on that a little bit before we go all in on some football talk. That said, like, plenty of basketball to talk about. Not necessarily what's happened so far, but I feel like there's plenty to talk about what will happen this week. So might as well jump in there. And then again, football, we have a few things to talk about. I think Dan and I were warranted in ignoring most of the Louisville preview information, if only because it didn't matter.
We told you it was going to happen.
Yeah, we told you what was going to happen, and it did.
We basically wrote the damn script. Like, they're going to hit some big plays because our defense gives up a couple big plays every game. Most likely their quarterbacks will run for a lot of yardage, which happened, and the rest was, whew. The only thing we didn't hit is I think by the end we settled that we were probably not going to get Petrino fired because his buyout is going to drop a lot in a couple of weeks.
Ends up they did not care.
They didn't care. When you have 10 offsides penalties and a half, you're going to get fired. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, the pay to unsubscribe model where you're just so dead set on not seeing the content anymore that you'll pay to avoid it.
Bobby Petrino is basically like whoever signed up for porn VHS tapes in the 90s. You just can't get rid of them. You're just going to have to pay some money, and eventually it'll go away.
And with that, Syracuse men's basketball. Through two games, O'Shea Brissett has become the monster, hopefully, that we projected him to be. 18.5 points a game, 10.5 rebounds. He's really been a much more complete player. Not perfect. I don't think anyone on this team has been perfect so far, but I think he's really, really shown himself. I think Battle had a really nice bounce-back game in Game 2. Elijah Hughes has been some great scorer. I think Pascal Chukwu has taken some real strides on the offensive end. I think we already knew what he could do defensively. And the fact that James and I talked about this a little bit during the preview. We said, like, even if he could show marginal improvement on the offensive end, that would be huge. I think having four guys who could conceivably be near double digits every night. And obviously it's only two games so far, so who knows how long this holds. But having four guys, and without Frank Howard involved, without Jalen Carey really playing big minutes, having those guys involved this early and scoring well, I think is great. Having SU be able to crash the boards with some efficiency is great. I'm very, very excited about what I'm seeing so far, even if it looks kind of hot and cold, and admittedly the defense over the weekend on Saturday against Morehead State wasn't always at its best.
Yeah, I tweeted basically when Morehead started cutting the lead down pretty severely in the first half, like, I'm going to avoid getting too worked up until we see this team with Frank Howard playing at close to 100%, because, like, he's a huge part of this roster. He is a senior, all-ACC caliber point guard, and you're just never going to play your best game without your point guard. And even now, like, we have Jalen Carey back. He's working his way back in. He hasn't, really shown yet, and that's what we expected. He's coming off of a pretty bad ankle sprain.
Yeah.
And we've seen flashes of that explosion, especially in the first game, where he had that really nice drive to the basket. But he's still coming around. We've barely seen Howard Washington. We have not seen any Frank Howard. So I'm not going to get super worked up until we see Frank back. The offense definitely is still finding itself, especially beyond the arc. We've been horrible shooting threes. I don't think this is going to be a great three-point shooting team, but I think it'll be
better than 18%.
Better than 18% and better than last year. Especially with Battle, I think Beheim alluded to it after the game. Like, Battle's only taking two threes this year. He just isn't comfortable shooting it from there right now. And we've seen from, like, the last 2 years, like, he's not a super great three-point shooter, but he's not an unwilling one. I think the positive is Battle did the thing where you, if you're not shooting particularly well as a good scorer, like, you just find your way to the stripe. And he shot he was 9-for-10 from the line against Morehead State. And that was a big part of him getting up to 23 points to leave the team. So I was very encouraged that he was able to, like, manufacture points and get himself back into some kind of a rhythm and ended up with a nice second game. O'Shea, I think so far, he's probably been our best overall player. I think he's, like, a step forward from where he was last year. We haven't quite seen him add those next pieces to his game yet, and that could come during the season. But what we are seeing is, like, a slightly, maybe more consistent, a slightly higher ceiling version of what we got last year, which is a really, really good player. So definitely encouraged by that so far. Hopefully he starts to become a bit more efficient shooting the ball. And then Hughes just looks really good. Hughes is going to be a good scorer all year. And then once we get Frank back, I think this is a really, really dangerous starting five, especially with the way Chukwu has become a more reliable scorer, like you said.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to expect 10 and 8 from him every game. I think if we get something around, like, 8 and 8 even from him, I think 8 rebounds from him is kind of a minimum viable on the boards. But if we can get even 8 and 8 from him, assuming Dolezal probably scores a little bit more, assuming a healthy carry scores more, and again, injecting like a Frank Howard that probably scores 14 to 15 a game, like this team is a lot more viable on offense. It's what you and I have talked about in the offseason. It's what James and I talked about in the preview episode. Like, the big difference that it seems like everybody, at least all the naysayers previewing this team, didn't seem to get was like when they saw it, they said, oh, returning everyone and the defense is going to be good, but can the team still score? I don't understand why anyone thinks this team's going to score more. Well, it's because like adding in carry, potentially adding in Buddy Boeheim, who like hasn't necessarily shown the same flashes in the regular season that he showed in preseason, which is understandable. But inserting those two guys, inserting Hughes, like even if the three of them combine for just 12 points a game, and I think they'll end up with a lot more than that, that's still scoring that we did not have access to last year and minutes that we didn't have access to last year. So I think this team's fine. Again, the fact that Syracuse fans have a lot of complaints, or at least some do, about the first two games, and they still won both games pretty comfortably, I'd say that's a pretty good sign for SU going forward.
Yeah, the Buddy thing's interesting because he came out so red hot in that first game. We have to remember, like, we didn't know what to expect from Buddy in this first season heading in. I think a lot of us thought he might not even make the rotation, and his role going forward is yet to be seen. We all know how the Boeheim thing works. And I don't think he's going to make any exception for his son. But, like, Buddy's playing 26 minutes a game. We know he's not going to play that during the season, and he's been thrust into the starting lineup. Buddy is probably going to be playing more than twos when the season progresses. So he's kind of playing out of his role more than anyone else, aside from Tyus, who has been kind of forced to man the point. So those two guys who have had different levels of struggle, obviously Tyus had a bad first game, bounced back, Buddy hasn't had two good games. They're playing very much out of where they're going to be during the year once we have the point guard's situation all settled. So I'm not too worried about him. We shouldn't have like come into this season thinking we need Buddy Bam to be like the team's ace 3-point threat. Like, but whatever Buddy gives us, I think this year is a nice lift, and hopefully, and I have no concerns about, you know, him being able to be an effective bench player going forward. And that just goes for the whole team. Like, looking at the minute breakdown, we know this isn't going to be what it looks like because we're injecting a guy who played like what 38 minutes a game last year into the starting lineup sometime going forward, hopefully in UConn. So this will all change a lot. This is not the team we will see during the year, and you know, knock on wood, we will have a fully healthy season for the most part. So, it's hard to really take too much away from how the team has played as a whole. It's looked, you know, kind of sloppy, but it's also the first two games of the year. This is always how it is. And also, like, the Morehead concerns, we beat them by 14. UConn only beat them by 10. So Morehead might actually be decent this year. I know they had a terrible season last year, I think, but like, I'm not going to get too worked up about that game either.
Oh, yeah, and I think that's a good kind of segue into the UConn matchup. Like, you know what, UConn, they're probably not a tournament team this year. Or if they are, it's very much on the fringe. I wouldn't buy it necessarily, but they do have Jalen Adams, who is one of the better players in the country. Terrence Smith's put in some really nice numbers so far, as has Josh Carlton. Alterique Gilbert, who some might recognize as a former Syracuse recruiting target. Like, these guys are all playing well. I know, like, in general, I think UConn just has a more balanced lineup structure, and that's fine. Like, I don't think that necessarily matters that much when you think about how deep some teams that have faced Syracuse have been. The one thing I will say about UConn is that they are shooting the ball much more efficiently than Syracuse is, but they also are crashing the boards at a much lesser rate. So, you know, take with that what you will. Like, there's some reasons to think that, you know, the UConn game might actually be a little more interesting than recent years, not because of, you know, their talent level being anywhere near ours, but more because I think both teams are several steps ahead of where they used to be offensively. So you're not going to see like kind of the ugly slugfest that we've seen the last couple seasons at MSG against UConn. Rather, we're going to see something that's a lot more palatable, going to look a lot more like basketball. UConn's defense isn't necessarily that good this year, at least through two games. So I'd expect Syracuse hopefully to get some decent shots. If they can start hitting from outside, I think you can see a Syracuse team get to 75 or 80 points, and that should be enough given the Orange defense to come away with a win.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to watch UConn yet, but looking at the numbers, they are shooting the ball a lot better than SU has so far. Granted, it's 2 games, so it's not really a good sample size. But they are definitely vulnerable on the inside based on these first 2 games, because basically all the damage the two teams they played, Morehead and I believe they had UKMC.
Yep.
They both did a fair amount of damage with their forwards. So obviously we're more of a guard-oriented team, but I think
bigger.
You'll see it. We are bigger. Our guards are probably the size of the forwards in those clubs. But I also think you'll see O'Shea really have a chance to feast in this one. And I wouldn't be surprised to see the Battles and Hughes really get to work on the inside and try to just really win those matchups, because Adams and Altre Gilbert are very good. They are not. They're both giving up like 4 inches in their matchups. So and then same goes for Frank if he's playing. I think we have a pretty distinct size advantage there. And then if Shuku plays the way he has and hopefully limits the foul trouble a little bit, that should be a big advantage as well.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think one of the bigger things in terms of Syracuse stopping UConn is going to be how they manage the non-Jalen Adams players. We've seen this before. When there's one player who's clearly very good on a roster, in this case, Jalen Adams, like, SU will let him get his points, and then shut down everybody else and dare that one player to beat him. And a lot of the time, it doesn't necessarily work for the opponent. Here, obviously, I'm not discounting Taren Smith or Gilbert. I just think that Adams, at least coming into the season, was far and away the best player on this team. So I'm curious to see how they defend him and how they let him get his buckets while shutting down everybody else. I think that should be one of the key matchups to this game. Again, I would take the orange in this one. Whether Frank's back or not, but especially if Frank is back, because I think that just gives SU, more scoring options, more bodies, and arguably their what do you think, first, maybe second at worst defender back. Like, people seem to forget about that too. Like, SU held Eastern Washington to like the tied for the lowest modern scoring mark for SU basketball, despite their best defender not playing a single second of the game.
Yeah, and Eastern Washington generally being like a pretty decent mid-major team. Even if they weren't, they scored 37 points. Like, they're college basketball players. They're on scholarship. Like, they're better than that. So, defensively, this club is always going to be an issue. And I don't know how much experience Dan Hurley has coaching against the zone.
I don't really think anyone runs zone or has run zone in the A-10 since, like, because didn't Temple run zone under Chaney?
Temple ran the Amoeba zone famously, but that wasn't the same thing either. And I'm pretty sure John Chaney was long gone by the time Danny Hurley got that job. So
yeah, so I don't really think. Yeah, and they also weren't in the A-10 anymore. I don't think there's a team that runs at least any sort of zone to the same level we do in that conference.
He did play Duke last year in the tournament, but that was probably the. That's probably the extent of it, and it didn't go so well.
No, it did not. Looking past UConn a little bit, just because we could face them whether we win or lose, Oregon. Oregon's also 2-0. They played their preliminary kind of home tournament games before they got to MSG. I'm not really sure what kind of benefit this grants Oregon to play in MSG, but whatever. Oregon beat Portland State 84-57, and then they beat Eastern Washington 81-47. Oregon's a pretty good defensive team. They're also a very good offensive team. I know they're not as efficient as Syracuse is according to the numbers on defense, but offensively they're much, much better. Bol Bol has had a field day through 2 games, and really, like, this is another one of those situations where I'm curious to see us. Like, Peyton Pritchard's obviously very good too, but I'm very curious to see how SU defends him in particular when he's averaging 17.5 and 12, along with 3.5 blocks per game through 2 contests.
I cannot wait for the potential of a Bol Bol Pastel Chukwu matchup. And I know Bol Bol flirts a bit more. He shoots threes. He's like a bizarre modern player. But they're both 7'2". So that could be really fun. And then it's Iowa, right? It's the other team we could play who I...
National Power Iowa.
National Power Iowa. The return.
The king returns. Just, we faced Iowa actually at MSG a couple years ago.
Yep.
And that did not go well.
Nope. I was there, I think.
Because that's like, we faced them a couple times at MSG. And I think, like, yeah, the last one went poorly. The one before that did not. I think the last one before that might have been, like, 09. We faced, like, Stanford during, or whatever in that weird tournament.
It was Cal and – no, it was Cal and UNC in 09.
Oh, yeah.
It was, I think you were mixing up them and Cal, which was also a – well, that was pre-Cal can get right back in this. We just happened to play Cal the year before as well, or 2 years before.
It looks like we've only played Iowa 3 times ever. We I just inserted another Iowa game. It never happened. we beat Iowa at MSG in 2014, 66-63. And then the only other meetings, a loss against a Lute Olson-coached Iowa team in the 1980 Sweet 16. And then we lost to them 58-52 in 1957.
So you were mixing up Iowa at MSG, which was a close win and not a close loss. Who did we play after that?
Cal. I thought we played Cal.
I remember that...
Yeah, almost positive we played Cal.
Google's not super helpful. I googled Syracuse Iowa 2014, and the third link on Google is Syracuse.com about Matt Whitaker, so that's not what we wanted.
Oh, no.
It was Cal. It was Cal beat us.
Cal finally got back in this.
Cal got back in this and beat us, and then we played Iowa in the consolation
game. There it is. Yeah, this is what happens when too many teams wear yellow. Yeah, in the Iowa game, Chris McCullough scored 20 points and had 9 rebounds.
Yeah, that was probably his best game as a Syracuse player, I remember.
Way to go, Chris McCullough. You've smartly parlayed that into a very long kind of journeyman career where you're still making more than the rest of us. So, props.
Yep. Chris is going to probably be in China or somewhere similar in a couple of years, and he's been making like probably $700,000 a year, so there are worse things. Yep, so that was the last time we played Iowa. So it wasn't a bad day. It was a marginal day for a marginal team that went to the Final Four.
Yeah, and this Iowa team is marginal-ish. They're not terrible. I see them having... I mean, they're 2-0. They got Tyler Cook, Jordan Bohannon is like, kind of like their leading scorers.
They're a very Big Ten basketball team.
Yeah, exactly. They're the sort of Big Ten. Although I feel like the Big Ten's evolving a little bit. I feel like they're starting to find a way to like to have like very kind of like rough and tumble teams that actually score more than 60 points a game on a regular basis.
Yeah, they can shoot. It's just like they just have a lot of veterans.
A lot of scrappy, very white veterans.
Yep. Jordan Bohannon is like could have played point guard at Duke yesteryear. Joe Weisskamp's been there for a while, I believe. Tyler Cook's been there for a while, I believe. These are all familiar names if you, like, stroll past and watch. Actually, Joe Weisskamp's only a freshman, so I lied. Tyler Cook is a junior. These are names that are familiar to you if you, like, stroll through college basketball on, like, ESPN on a random Wednesday night or Thursday night whenever the Big Ten plays or Big Ten Network, and you'll pick up on these people. I think they were pretty bad last year, right? They had, like, a bizarrely down season.
Were they? I thought they were actually pretty good last year.
No, I think they might have started. I think they started the year really poorly, at least. Oh yeah, they were bad. I'm looking at just a bunch of losing streaks. They lost six in a row.
14 and 19. Yeah. They were 88th in KenPom last year, which feels right for them. National powers though usually don't go that far down.
And then they took Michigan to the overtime in the Big Ten tournament.
Of course. As one does. No, they're 38th in the in KenPom to start this season.
Yeah, they brought back like everybody, so they should be much better this year.
They're actually pretty. They play on the faster end, not like super fast. And they have 49th in adjusted tempo.
Yeah, so that's a potential matchup. I think we both hope and assume. Well, we both assume we'll be playing Oregon because we assume Oregon will beat Iowa and that we will beat UConn. But it's hard to tell with these early season tournaments.
Yeah, I mean, again, we'll see kind of who's back, who's ready to go at 100%. If SU doesn't necessarily have its full complement of point guards and still has Tyus Battle running point for some considerable amount of time, like maybe that starts throwing a wrench into the gears. But we'll see. I think it's too early to really overreact about anything, especially when we're not 100% healthy. So I wouldn't. If I were Orange fans, I wouldn't start drawing any conclusions until maybe even after these games, like. Let's see who's actually on the court, but with luck, SU is 4-0 coming out of this, and maybe with a marquee win over over one of the Pac-12s, if not the Pac-12's top team in Oregon.
It'd be nice.
Plus, I would love some Oregon Schadenfreude to add to the collection here, especially now that it would be because of Syracuse and not just because we decided to grasp at straws and tee off on them for no reason.
I do enjoy, and Oregon's obviously more of your pet Schadenfreude, but I do enjoy that we have lots of jokes to make about all the three of these teams if we, you know, however these matchups shake out.
We can thank John Rothstein for the Iowa stuff.
It has nothing to do with Iowa. It's all about John Rothstein.
That's true. I feel like Iowa might be the John Rothstein of college basketball.
I do. I mean, pretty much, I feel like at this point, like half of the national college basketball jokes stem from a John Rothstein tweet once. Although that was an article, weirdly.
The strangest article.
Yeah. Although I think and I've probably made this joke before, so I'm most likely plagiarizing myself. But I think to John Rothstein, all college basketball teams are powerhouses. He just loves them all. They're all his large adult sons.
I can't disagree with you. I guess moving on a little bit to football before we get to halftime, like very briefly, we can kind of just recap the disaster, not for us, that was Syracuse's win over Louisville. I was really hoping we were going to hang 70 on them. We did not.
If we didn't play like ass, we would have. We played pretty poorly and won so like one by 30 points.
This is another one of those games that like goes back to what you and I have been saying on this podcast all year, that like Syracuse trips and falls into 40-point games, and like it feels insane to say that.
If Syracuse played like honestly, the last time Syracuse played like that in a competitive Louisville game, we scored 9 points.
Right.
Like, we did not play well, and we scored 54. If we had played our A game, we would have scored 70 without much of an issue, which is, like, it's not, I don't even know what to feel about that. I tweeted, like, this is my favorite game ever, because we were playing so nonchalantly.
We still had a 98% chance to
on
win.
Offense. Defensively, we played quite well, aside from a couple of big plays. But on offense, we just, like, were so mediocre. Dungy and like had some really nice moments, but I thought played probably one of his worst games of the year.
52.7 QBR, so not great.
It's not great, but like in years past, our bad QBRs were in the 30s regularly. He did get some more stuff done on the ground, which was very vintage Dungy, and I kind of wish his last throw had been that long one that he completed for the touchdown.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I really wanted to pull him after that, and I get why Babers. I don't know why Baber left him in for one more drive. I get why he put him in for that one handoff, get the salute.
But there was a cheap shot in there before that.
Yes, that wasn't great. Oh God, the Giants. Oh, they're so bad.
But we want to be.
Yeah, Eli just threw a pick. Well, it wasn't really his fault. That deflected directly into someone's eyes.
No, that's fine. The Giants kicker is on the fantasy team that I'm going against. And I'm only up by like 11, so I feel like this is good.
I'm down 13 with Robbie Gould and Matt Breda, so I'm all Niners today, to your chagrin. I do wish that Dungy had been able to walk off after that long touchdown to Naheem. But I did appreciate the like one handoff and like actually getting the curtain call type treatment. So that was cool. The senior walk was really cool. Mostly like the videos after watch just showing him going around the entire perimeter. Really, I really appreciated that tradition, and I hope they keep on doing it. I hope it means that Babers is around to do it a lot more. So overall, it's hard to really complain. Hopefully,
yeah.
We bring our A game for Notre Dame, which I don't think will be lacking in motivation.
Well, and to be honest, like I mean, without rewatching, because I kind of, at least for now, stopped doing that just to save myself. This is what happens when you don't sleep as much as you once did. I feel like we didn't really open up the playbook much. I also feel like we were just trying to get seniors plays as much as possible, except for Dante Strickland, who we seemingly ignored in that quest. I do feel like Dungy at one point was just like, nah, we won this game, so I'm just going to keep throwing Custis. And like that was the main focus for him. And like the second half was just like, let me see how many passes I can get into Custis' hands.
Yeah, which I get. And he only ended up catching two, but we fired a lot there. Yeah, just wasn't the best game for Dungy overall. He just didn't look super sharp. No. He did make a lot happen on the ground, though.
He did. No, he made some really nice plays. I think it was. I don't know if you caught this in the comments where I was talking to a couple people about Custis, and I think my my biggest differentiator between Custis and like Edetawo and Ishmael before him is that Edetawo and Ishmael had size and like marginal speed, but they were great route runners who like they knew how to beat inferior defenders, and then they could also go up against better defenders and make 50-50 balls happen. While Custis, I feel like he's not that great of a route runner. He has the same physical gifts, but then he also makes every pass a 50-50 ball. And like that's not necessarily what you want.
Yeah, and it probably shouldn't be that surprising. I know he's a fifth-year senior, but he's, you know, this is his first real season of being a playmaker at all. I think he's faster, I think, honestly, than either Edetawo and Ishmael, and he's bigger than both those guys. So I think his physical gifts are ahead. He just doesn't have the skill set right now. Like, Ishmael was such a good route runner. That dude was basically perfect his senior year, and then they both had fantastic hands. Custis is lacking. He's not bad. He's just not where those guys were, even if he is bigger and faster. So hopefully someone gives him a shot at the next level just based on those physical tools, because they're definitely there. He just still needs some refining. Versus Ahmed was just such a crazy one season. It's hard to really even like know who to credit there. Right. But Steve was a four-year performer for us and was like one of our best players on offense from day one. So he had a lot of time to refine his craft. Yeah, the only reason I was a little more annoyed is that it gave us four field goals out of Andre Schmidt, who is
definitely breaking a record now.
It looks like he's going to break the NCAA FBS record for field goals. He's four off with three games to play, so probably going to happen. He's kicked at least two in every game, I think.
Yeah, he's great. He's already the leading scorer for single season in SU history now.
Which he will shatter.
Yeah,
because
shattering that record. One other thing about this game before we get to half, I promise. Dan, how many more carries would you have given Mo Neal, given how productive he was in the crowd?
I mean, you could have given him as many as you want. I mean, he had averaged he was a hair under 20 yards a carry, so he picked up right where every Clemson running back left off last week.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was awesome.
They handed him the baton spiritually and just said, run with this, my son. You must go.
Yeah, and like as you alluded to, it would have been cool to see Dante get some more work, but it's not like we've been hurting. Dante Strayhorn's been a really nice four-year player for us, so it's not like he's been hurting for playing time. He just had way less of it this week, especially more at Jarvion Howard's, more at the expense of, you know what I mean. Jarvion Howard took more of his carries.
Yeah.
He had 15 for 71 and a nice score. And then Dungy ran a bunch, but those were more, you know, normal Dungy things. But yeah, Mo is awesome. Mo is going to be an absolute problem next year for teams with Abdullah Adams and with Jawar Jordan and all the other talent that we're bringing back. It's hard not to, like, on paper, the Syracuse team should continue to get better, which is scary. And hopefully we don't have any surprises on the coaching staff to deal with. I know there are rumors out there, you probably had to expect there would be.
But none of these jobs he's going to. Maybe USC, yeah. But like none of the other jobs he's going to. This is all like if Dino's name shows up in every single list, it's because Dino's agent has been in every single year.
Yes, Dino's agent's is doing his job, and it's hard to really blame him for that. No. If Dino gets offered USC, I'm not gonna freak out about it. Like if Dino gets offered USC, that's one of the premier jobs in the sport, and that's what happens when your coach does really well.
He also might not take it because of how USC handles their coaches.
Yeah, and he didn't go there. So he'll be like side-eyed the moment he goes to the door. But like you have to remember, are the last two coaches we've had leave willingly both went to the NFL. So like now the Niners do an awful pick. It's really like if he leaves for a job like that, you just thank him for what he did and hope that we continue momentum. And I know that's been difficult in the past, but I'm also not going to worry about the USC job. I'm not going to worry about Louisville, because they're most definitely going to hire Jeff Brohm. I'm not going to worry about Purdue, because that's very much a lateral move.
We'd probably hire Sean Lewis, admittedly. I don't know if I'd be a fan of that, but I would understand why we'd do it.
Yeah, I don't know. Sean Lewis, I think, has done, like all things considered, not a bad job at Kent State so far, but I think I'd want to be a little more aggressive than that.
Well, I agree. I think that does feel like the Syracuse move, even if I don't want it to be.
That would definitely be that would have been the Syracuse move in 2013 or 2012. Yeah, so we'll cross that bridge if it happens. I think it's very unlikely, okay, based on the jobs that have opened. And it doesn't seem like we're... I mean, there's always a surprise, but it doesn't seem like we have a like crazy carousel in front of us. As we've had like two or three in a row. It seems like this year is going to be mostly like pretty tame, barring like a weird like Rich Rod type situation at the end of the year or something with some team that we don't foresee.
Well, yeah. I mean, and to be honest, if we're looking at a situation like that, it's probably Ohio State. But I think Ohio State already has its ducks in a row in terms of like the top two names on that list.
Ohio State's either hired like
it's either Ryan Day or Fickell,
who did an awesome job earlier in the year. Luke Fickell's sitting there right in the state. Matt Campbell's gotten so much hype for that job.
Another job they couldn't hire. That like that's the thing. Like them and even like them because of how straight lines there are to that job, and even Auburn, which like. Doesn't they have the money, but I wouldn't necessarily say they have the pull to get, like, if they don't get Babers directly, they don't create a cascade. Like NFL offers are what create that cascade. NFL offers to the top coaches are what create that cascade of job changes down the line.
Yeah, and Auburn, they would not be thrilled. I don't think their fan base would be thrilled hiring Babers.
No,
I think,
not at all.
They want to go way bigger if they fire Melzon. Because like if you're firing Melzon, you need to really go high, because Melzon has, obviously there are issues there. He is probably one of the 15 to 20 best coaches in college football, even with those issues.
Right.
So again, this is like not a thing to worry about until it actually like looks like it might happen. Right now, it's very clear that Babers' agent is working the phones real hard, and as he well should, because we should re-sign Babers and make it very hard for him to leave. And hopefully he gets that contract. I mean, if he's here next year, it's with a new contract. There's just no chance it's not.
Oh, I completely agree. But I don't want to panic SU fans anymore.
Nope.
And needed. So we will move on to some beer, and hopefully drinking it happily and not nervously when talking about Dino Babers. Dan, what have you been drinking?
So I've had a couple new things since last we spoke. Last week after our podcast, I went and had a pumpkin down from Ballast Point. They're very strong pumpkin selection for the fall. I don't remember if they've done this that many years in a row, or at least it hasn't gotten out here before, but it's all over now, as most Ballast Point stuff is, and it's quite good. I had a grapefruit ting by Siren Craft Brew, which I had seen someone in our Slack, I think, I forget who it was in Slack, talking about Siren. I hadn't had anything from them before, but then, like, I saw this, so I had to get it. Very delicious sour. Really enjoyed it. I had a couple white IPAs from Braven, which are quite good. White IPA I'm always a fan of, and you don't see too much of it. Had some All Days from Founders, pretty standard. And then last night I had a Wrench IPA from Industrial Arts, one of my favorite Hudson Valley brewers. So all their IPAs are always fantastic. And then hopefully we'll get to have some craft beers, like a noted craft brew Bud Light at Easton Bar and Grill.
this
Friday.
Yeah, that's a good segue into. We'll get to my beer picks in a second. But for those of you who've been on the blog recently, have seen our social, listened to the blog last week. We will be having our first live podcast over at East End Bar and Grill. Some may know it as one of the bigger Syracuse bars in New York City, if not the biggest Syracuse bar in New York City. We'll have that around 10 p.m. It'll be after the Friday game at MSG. It'll be hour and a half of live podcasting. Dan will be there. Andy will be there. James will be there. Hoya Suxa will also be there. I'm sure you'll find some other former and current Noons folks in attendance. Seems like we're going to have a pretty nice turnout. We'll have merchandise as well. There's a koozie deal involving... As Dan noted, craft beverage Bud Light and koozie purchase situation that we'll be spelling out for everybody in written form. There'll be T-shirts as well. Should be a good time. Wish I could be there this time, but hopefully next.
Yes, there's basically going to be no reason for you to not at least come get a almost free Bud Light with your Noons koozie. And even though we don't generally support Bud Light, that is our craft beer of the week. It's a microbrew out of St. Louis. Kind of a weird choice for a Syracuse event, but it is what it is.
Also, if you feel better about it, say you're buying the koozie so you can get, like, I mean, what makes you feel better, Dan? Buying a koozie to get a free Bud Light, or buying a Bud Light to get a free koozie?
I think whatever works for you as a person. I am, while I generally support drinking craft beers, like, I'm also not someone who's just gonna, like, turn down a free beer if someone gives it to me, even if it's awful. I'm not at that point in my life yet. So, yeah, if you want to, like, if you want to come give me your Bud Light or your Koozie, I'll probably take either if you don't want one of those things as part of the equation. I don't know why you wouldn't, but, yeah, we'll do this together. If you want to come and chug a Bud Light with me, I'll be there for that. I'm sure we'll be hanging out after the podcast for a bit, celebrating the 2K Classic Championship. So, yeah, another reason to come down to, or go up, most likely, to East End Bar and Grill, up on, I believe they're on, like, 88th and 1st, if I remember correctly. Somewhere. Really, really great SU bar. So, yeah, I look forward to seeing a bunch of you there.
I look forward to seeing the many, many photos that are hopefully taken there as well. Quick stuff for me on beer. Had a few things over the weekend. Had from Mumford, had a third term West Coast IPA. Super good. They've released this one the last couple of years. You can probably understand the reference. Doesn't take very much effort. Stone also has their Mojay IPA. It was a nice combo, East Coast, West Coast IPA. I felt like I had a lot of these kind of combination beers lately, and I feel like this one might have done the best job of combining some of the things that I love about both styles and love particular about the West Coast style. Went over to Smog City, and they had their kind of big like barrel room event with some of their, you know, vintage sours and some one-offs. So had a Moroccan version of Cuddlebug. I think it's a peach and apricot combo on a Cuddlebug, which is a sour, and then some Moroccan spices in there, which is interesting. Also had their Citra Quercus, and it was a lambic-inspired ale. And then Enoki, which is a sour pale ale. Went over to Hermosa Brewing over in Hermosa Beach. Had a Get On Up West Coast IPA from them, which is very good. Nice, clean, crisp, light body. Not like too light by any means. Like light, just refreshing. Then Wakey Wakey. It was their coffee pale ale. That was like super intriguing. I would definitely recommend that one to the LA area listeners if you want to get over there. But yeah, some nice new stuff. It's been a while since I'd like been able to get out, obviously. So it was it was good to change things up a little bit.
Very nice.
Indeed, indeed. Also very nice, maybe. Syracuse's chances here. Vegas says we're about a 10-point underdog right now. I know it's shifted between like 9 and 10 points, depending on the sports book. I think that's fair. It is a neutral field. So that's like an honest assessment of the two. I think Notre Dame probably is about 10 points better than Syracuse right now, especially with the in-book in. That said, there are some reasons to believe in the orange. I think we'll get to those. But Dan, your initial thoughts, like where do you think Syracuse has the biggest opportunity against Notre Dame?
It's tough because Notre Dame's defense has been quite good this year. I think they've shown, they've let up a little bit in recent weeks. But I think it's kind of where Syracuse has thrived this year. I think it's making big plays and winning the special teams. Syracuse has basically gone wire to wire as having the best special teams in the country. Notre Dame's, I'm looking at Bill C's numbers, as we often do. Theirs are ranked 54th, so not bad, but not really game-changing in any way. So if Syracuse can kind of dominate field position, I mean, that's just such an inherent advantage that Syracuse has baked into its identity this season. And it seems to be just so consistent that you can almost count on it more than you can usually come with special team stuff. So I think it's winning things on the margin like that, because Notre Dame has a big talent advantage. I'm terrified of their rushing attack. Same. I'm not that afraid of Ian Book, weirdly. Like, he's been a lot better than Wimbush, but I feel like Wimbush is almost a 10 quarterback that gives us more trouble. So I'm not super worried about Book coming back, which he reportedly will be. That being said, like, our secondary is very feast or famine, so it could go really, really well or really poorly. But like, I'm looking at S&P Plus, and like, it gives us a 22%
chance. 2%.
Yeah, so it's like 1 in 4, roughly. 1 in 4, 1 in 5. Like, that feels pretty fair.
Yeah, you know, you brought up an interesting point there on Book. When I was talking to, and this Q&A will go up on Wednesday, our fellow SB Nation blog, One Foot Down for Notre Dame, when they asked who I was most scared of, Dexter Williams was my answer, the running back for Notre Dame, who missed the first few games and yet still has like 770 yards. And his efforts powered my fantasy team to win over Dan's this past week. But anyway, I kind of explained like briefly over there that, you know, Book's gonna get his or he's not. And I don't think, I mean, you look at like Ryan Finley put up some really big numbers against us, and so did Kelvin Harmon as wide receiver, and it didn't matter. I don't necessarily think the passing success is what's going to win you games against Syracuse. I think it's all about running the football. If you're going to beat the Orange, that's where it's going to be, because if you pass consistently, that plays right into our hands of, all right, we're just going to rush 4 to 5 every single down. And like, yes, our secondary is very high risk, high reward, but if we keep putting you in riskier situations, you know, altering the trajectory of passes, rushing the ball, things like that, just forcing quarterbacks to go through their progressions much more quickly, like that's how you're gonna, you know, force those mistakes. And for me, like, Book has been pretty good this year, completed almost 75% of his passes. He's averaging 9 yards an attempt. Like, those are all great things, and I think they shouldn't be discounted at all. However, like, a team passing is definitely going to play better into what we want to do, I think, on both sides of the ball, because passing's obviously going to get us the football back on offense more quickly too. So, like, to me, I think that, you know, if they're smart, they'll lean on Dexter Williams. They'll use Book. You know, Book can run a little bit, so I think they'll lean on, you know, Book in the passing game to help if they want to help us, and if they want to win the game, they'll lean on Williams in the running game. Like, it's weird to think that, given how we do let up big plays and how that increases over the course of the game, and the secondary does struggle. But to me, I think time and time again this season, we've seen when teams lean on the run to beat us, they win. Or come as close to possible to winning, and if they don't, they lose.
Yeah, I'm also interested to see what the weather looks like. Right now, we're projected to be like pretty nice on Saturday, 50 and sunny here, which it's been cold all week, and it's going to be rainy basically all week, and we might actually get some snow on Thursday, so I do wonder what the field conditions going to be. Terrible. In the stadium, notably not the best playing condition as we've seen in our recent games there, or previous games there. But Saturday itself should be actually pretty nice, so that could really affect things too. And although this year Syracuse doesn't seem all that afraid to make it like a rushing versus rushing attack, it's just a matter of stopping it once in a while. So it's tough. Like, Notre Dame, there's no like glaring weakness on their team that says like this is a thing that Syracuse is going to exploit, but they're not so good that I don't think that there's a win in here somewhere.
Yeah, and like, admittedly, even if Book's starting, like, I'm very curious to see, like, okay, is he actually 100%? Are those ribs still going to be a bit of a problem? Like, to me, like, that's something to watch. Notre Dame is good against the run. They're not, like, amazing. I think part of that's also influenced by their game against Navy. So I'd take any team that's played an option attack, I would, you know, take that with a grain of salt. But yeah, Notre Dame averaging 3.72 yards per carry against, which is actually pretty good. I mean, especially as far as like all the teams in that general like 40 to 60 range, they're one of the better ones. But I do think that, you know, their schedule probably hasn't involved as much tempo. I think, again, like, also keep in mind the Navy stuff. So I think some of that yardage total might be a little influenced by that. But I think SU is going to be able to run the ball a little bit. I'm very curious to see if they can actually get a spy on Dungy, because like, if they can get a spy on Dungy, keep him in the pocket, like, those are the teams that usually give us the most fits are the ones where, you know, Dungy's kind of limited. He can't roll out. I mean, when Dungy extends the pocket really from sideline to sideline, which is, I think, his best attribute, and really stretches defenses, like, that's where the big plays happen. That's where the mistakes start happening from the secondary when he does things like that. So I think how they can contain him and what they can do to him over the course of this game is, as usual, going to be key. But I think in particular for Notre Dame, like, I think everything locks in on Dungy in this one.
Yeah, I'm looking at their schedule this year. It doesn't seem like they've played a ton of really super good mobile quarterbacks. Obviously, Navy is its own thing.
Yeah.
But like, going down their list, like, Michigan game, they obviously locked up Michigan, although Christian McCaffrey's little brother, came in at the end and actually gave Michigan a nice spark, and he's more of a dual threat guy. Sam Hartman for Wake Forest ran 13 times for 29 yards, so not super effective there. But like, overall, this wasn't like a great list of mobile quarterbacks at all.
True.
So it's kind of hard to tell how they will have to deal with Dungy, just because Dungy is such a unique player.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, like, looking at the per-game numbers, too, like I said, like, this is kind of boosted a little bit by Navy. Like, 6.08 allowed per carry against Navy, 4 per carry against Virginia Tech, 4.25 against Wake. Other than that, everybody's been held to under 4 yards carry. So, like, got our work cut out for us, but I think Syracuse's big advantage, too, here is that it doesn't have a feature back. So, you know, if we end up – if they can shut us down in the passing, who knows, maybe they can. Like, we do have the ability to run the football, Adam. We have 4 guys, you know, Dungy, Strickland, Neal, Howard, like, to throw at him. And that's an advantage that, you know, not every team necessarily has the luxury of just having all these guys you can just consistently hand off to and kind of, you know, not bear the burden of all those hits on just one guy. So, like, Notre Dame's going to be one of the better defensive fronts we face this year, just because we have faced a few bad defenses this season. But I do see the run game playing a big part in this one.
We also face Clemson, so, like, you're not going to face a better defensive front than that. So it's not like we won't have something to look back on and say, like, we faced a bigger challenge than this.
Although we did basically avoid running the ball in that one.
Yeah, it was a strange game, but
they only sacked us once, though.
Yeah, we've held our own with Clemson twice. Like, I think our offensive line has played up quite a bit and has been good all year. So I'm not too concerned about their defensive front, although it is quite good. Yeah, so basically, like, I think the advanced numbers, like, giving us a 22% chance to win, I totally buy that. And against the number 3 team in the country, I think you'll take that.
Yeah, I'm completely on board. Honestly, like, SU's done a good, not great job at keeping quarterbacks upright. I think we have 24 sacks allowed on the season, which is, like, 80th or so.
I think Dungy, honestly, is part of that, though.
He is.
He takes more sacks than he should.
He, you know what, though? I'm almost happier because most of those sacks are not the vicious hits they once were.
No, he's good at mitigating. I mean, all year, I think he's taken maybe 2 big hits, which is, like, he'd take 2 a game last year, yeah. And every year before this. He has mitigated, like, the big blows. I do think there have been times where he's stepped into sacks, and there have been times where he could have gotten the ball out. But you know, you'll take... I'd rather take 1 sack than you know, a horrendous play, and he's limited turnovers. Most of the, I mean, he has, what, 5 interceptions this year?
Yeah.
6, maybe?
5.
So,
there's also been snap issues, like, numerous times, and, like, he's mitigated those by just quickly recovering the football.
Right, and he's never been a big interception guy, but it, like, hasn't gotten worse this year as we've, you know, taken more shots downfield and whatnot. Right. So, yeah, overall, like, I think that's not, like, a major, major concern. It's basically we're going to have to play a really good game, and we're going to have to on both sides of the ball, and that's what happens when you play these top 5 teams. Like, that's the only way you're going to win them is if you play a really excellent game. And this year we've been lucky enough to be good enough to win some games where we haven't played great. Look at Louisville, even look at Wake. And this isn't going to be that case. We're going to have to go out and, like, play like we did in Clemson last year, play like we did in Virginia Tech a couple years ago. Even, like, earlier this year, for most of the games against Clemson, for parts of the NC State game, I don't know that we've put together that, like, full double-pronged performance. We're just quite good this year versus, like, having to really step up. But if we get that A game, like, we can absolutely beat this team.
Yeah, I'm 100% on board with that. It's not going to be easy. I think we're going to have to pull a rabbit out of a hat. This is not going to take some miracle. It's just going to take what we've been doing. It's making smart decisions, avoiding turnovers, then creating opportunities to turn the ball over on the other end. Like, our average starting field position is almost the 37-yard line. Like, that in and of itself is a weapon that other teams just can't match. So I'm very, very encouraged to see what SU does here. I think, yeah, as long as the weather cooperates, as long as we don't see too much wind, I think that's going to be a key. Like, you saw how Dungy's been affected by wind before. Particularly the first quarter of the Wake game, the Wake game 2 years ago. I'm sure there's other games besides the Wake game, but Wake Forest seems to be a particular issue when it comes to wind for Dungy, and he just doesn't have the arm strength to necessarily deal with a strong gust. So I'm hoping that we stick to, like, 10 miles per hour or lower. We'll see, though. I just think anything we can do to avoid...
Yankee Stadium can get windy.
It can get windy, and anything we can do to avoid a... you know, a one-dimensional game like we saw, you know, again, early against Wake Forest, where we just really weren't, you know, throwing the football because Dungy couldn't necessarily get something on target. with the wins going. So I'd watch that, and I'd keep an eye on that throughout the week as we look at the forecast, because I think that's gonna factor in probably more than we'd like it to, but just something to consider.
Yeah, and on the other hand, if we can have Ian Book bathe in Crisco like Juwan Pass did before the game Friday, I think that would be good, because Juwan Pass a couple times just put the ball on the ground for no reason, and that was wonderful. I really enjoyed that.
I also enjoyed that. That was great. being able to use the Cisco GIF on Twitter was great for the fifth time this year. It'd been a while since we got to trot that one out. So, yeah,
Andre, I really wanted to get the pick six, and he was so close.
He was so close. Cisco's three picks away from tying the single season mark for Syracuse. I don't think he gets it, but hey, you never know.
Who has it? Is it
SU's record book on their website sucks. So it'd be entirely too tough for me to do that now. So instead, I'm going to Vamp while you're looking for it. That way people are less aware of the searching process, even if they can hear you typing.
I have Tommy Myers in 1971.
Did you pull that from the article I wrote?
No, I found it on Wikipedia.
No. Because, funny enough, and I don't really care if SU was listening to this, Wikipedia has a better Syracuse football record book than Syracuse does. I don't know if anyone else has frequented our Syracuse football statistical page on Wikipedia, but
it's pretty good.
It's quite good. It's mostly accurate. It's not fully updated for this season. It's only updated through about 4 weeks. But what I do usually is just cross-reference the totals there with the totals on ESPN or CFB stats just to get a quick gut check. And they're usually right. And I usually compare that then just do some quick math to see where, especially Eric Dungy, lands on these lists.
Yeah, it's definitely not updated, at least in recent weeks, because there's no Andre Schmidt on here. And he should be at the top of every list.
Yes.
But yeah, according to this, it is 8 for Tommy Myers in 71. And then it's a 4-way tie for second with 7 from Aveda Stone, who is a relatively significant player in Syracuse history. Marcus Paul, who leads in career as well with 19 from 85 to 88.
And has several Super Bowl rings.
Yes, and Donovan Darius, a familiar name. So yeah, and then single game record is 3 for Stone, Myers, and Marcus Paul. Two of those were set against Penn State, 20 years apart.
Yeah, take that, Penn State, who we might see in the Pinstripe Bowl if we lose the last two games.
Yeah, did you see the we're now, like, everyone's projecting us to their camping world, basically. And then Orlando Sentinel, who is known for having a very, very good college football section all the time, especially when it comes to Syracuse, has us in Music City in South Carolina.
Really? They had us in the Peach Bowl last week.
Orlando Sentinel did?
Yeah.
did Louisville ruin that for us?
Yes.
So yes, as we know, the Orlando Sentinel, which I believe 1 year ranked us like 112th in the country, and then we went on to make the Pinstripe Bowl.
They ranked us 109th this year.
The Orlando Sentinel is so bad. We haven't been the 109th best team in college, like,
since
we
Greg
haven't
been was
outside
there
of like the 80s since Robinson was here. Like, we're not, like, even at our worst the last, how, even under Schaefer, we were never that bad. So yeah, Orlando Sentinel, a bastion of college football national expertise. Things will be in Nashville, which I'm all for. If we lose the next two games, I think there are worse things.
Well, yeah, I also wouldn't trust that at all. I know.
Oh, it's very unlikely.
Yeah, I know. Andy's bowl watch is going up on Tuesday. I haven't looked at it yet, so that's usually where I like do the whole rundown. Everything I've seen a lot of Camping World Bowl, and I've seen a couple Peach Bowl picks. I think for us now, and I'll run down this again this week because some people still don't get it. Basically, for Syracuse, you beat Notre Dame, you're in the Peach Bowl, period.
Like, it does feel that way.
Because I don't see a loss to BC being able to knock us out of probably what would be like eighth place. Also considering that other teams in the top 12 have to lose. Like, yeah. one of West Virginia and Oklahoma loses at least one more time. One of Michigan and Ohio State loses at least one more time. Like,
my only concern is that the playoff committee doesn't quite work the same way as the polls all the time.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Especially with the last week of the season. Last week of the season, you see some weird stuff happen when they actually come to selecting who's going where.
Well, this is why I was saying to people, like, that's what I've been saying to people about, like, the NC State loss to Wake Forest does not help us. Like, it helps us only in the sense that NC State's now, like, pretty much out of the picture. when it comes to like being ranked ahead of us, but NC State is not. But NC State being out of the picture also means that our best win is as well. So that's why we need a win over Notre Dame. And if we don't beat them, then we're not in the Peach Bowl, but a win over BC would get us there. BC is still ranked. I think they're going to be ranked by the playoff committee as well. If we beat BC, we're in the Camping World Bowl. I think BC's out of the, what's it called? Out of the top 12 picture. They're out of that New Year's 6 picture. So it's really just, for us, it's if we can get the job done in one of the next two games, then we're in that Camping World Bowl. And I think that there's enough people willing to buy into the concept now, especially since Anthony Brown seems like he's pretty banged up and BC doesn't really have another option at quarterback. AJ Dillon, unsurprisingly, is a little worn down from overuse all season, which should sound familiar to Boston College fans or anyone that's watched Boston College football of late. You obviously don't wish ill upon Dillon. It's just not surprising that if you run a guy 35, 40 times a game, that he's probably getting a little tired.
Yeah, I mean, we saw this with Andre Williams in that the game that got us to the Texas Bowl. Like, they came in, they were pretty, I think they were decent-sized favorites against us at the Dome.
Yeah.
Andre Williams was having a
Heisman better season. Yeah.
Yeah, having, like, a legitimate, like, I think he ended up in the Heisman, I think it was in New York.
Yeah.
And he got hurt. I think he had like he wasn't having a good game anyway. But one of the better Scott Schaefer defenses shut him down. But then he got hurt midway through the game, and that basically, you know, that took BC's game plan way out. And then we ended up winning on the awesome throwback pass. So yeah, very similar. I haven't seen any injury update on Brown today. I haven't really looked. I wasn't working, so I kind of stayed off Twitter. Have they said anything more about him?
Yeah, they're not going. And they won't be there.
Unless he's probably out for the season, then yeah, they'll eventually say that. But so yeah, if Brown is out for the Demon and Dust, the backup did not. I mean, he was playing Clemson, so it's hard to really give him anything on that. Like,
but hey, we're gonna blitz the hell out of him. Situation. I mean,
sorry, what did you say?
I was saying, we're gonna blitz the hell out of him. So
we're gonna blitz, yeah. But like, I find it hard to like make judgments on him based on playing Clemson.
Yeah.
Being thrust into that the first time. But if he is not, you know, if he's not like really ready to go and Dillon is like as banged up as he looked against the Tigers, yeah, BC's in trouble. And as you would be if your two most important offensive players are hurt, like that just is what it is. So, yeah, we're looking. I think Bill C gives us, and his numbers aren't going to really take into account those injuries.
47%?
47% to beat BC, but like an 8.7 second order wins. So, and projecting for. We're projected for 8.7 wins. I was looking at Notre Dame's 8.7 second order, such as a weird coincidence. Yeah, projected for us to finish like 9-3. So odds are he thinks we'll pick up one of these maybe.
And if we do, nice. Camping World.
Yeah, and I can go to Pinstripe, I can go to Music City, and I can definitely go to Camping World based on the dates. The rest I probably cannot get to, unfortunately. So I'm rooting for any of those.
Peach is the only one I've got like a potential shot at.
Yeah, just New York 6. Not good for those who work in college football full time.
That's
unfortunately.
It's very fair. All right, Dan, as we wrap up here, your prediction against Notre Dame. What are you seeing happening?
I think we'll keep it. I think the spread is basically spot on. I think we'll keep it close enough. I won't predict a win, although, you know, obviously I really hope for one. I will say Notre Dame will pick this one up 35-28.
I'm in a similar boat. I think that both teams score a little bit more than that. I think SU has actually performed really well against P5 teams. They've only been held under 30 once this season. They've actually not really allowed as many points as you'd think they would have. Nonetheless, I think Notre Dame wins this one 44-34 in a game that Vegas pretty much nails.
Completely not on this subject, but I just watched Terrence LeVert maybe dislocate his ankle, so Brooklyn Nets season pretty much done.
Meet the Nets.
We were looking like maybe an 8 seed. Terrence LeVert had looked like one of the better surprises of the NBA season, and he just came down really, really badly.
That's fine. You guys should be an 8 seed. That way there's less competition for the Knicks to get the first seed.
To get the first pick.
So that's unfortunate. Anyway, yeah, back on better things back. Notre Dame Syracuse. I think it'll be a good team no matter what. I'd be very surprised if Notre Dame blew us out.
Agreed. Dan, anything else before we depart?
Nope. Come back to the show on Friday. Hope to see a bunch of you there. Hope to see a bunch of you at MSG / I don't have tickets for Yankee Stadium yet. There, it's absurdly expensive. I should have bought them the other night, and I didn't. So now they're really jumping up, but I plan to find a way in there. So, yeah, big Syracuse weekend in New York. Very excited.
Agreed. Q's in the city. Get your T-shirt that you won't have until after the games at the bookstore. or buy one from us. Who knows?
Yes, do that. You can have it on Friday after two of the three games, but whatever.
Yeah, you'll have it in hand on Friday. Anyway, you weren't wearing the same shirt three games anyway.
I guarantee you some people are.
Yeah, you're right. anyway, that was Dan. I'm John. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. You can rate, review, subscribe on Blog Talk, on iTunes, on wherever else to listen to podcasts. And go Orange.
Go Orange.